Welcome to a very special bonus level of The Level, where we're going to talk about 400 Days, which is the most recent episode of The Walking Dead video game, which we so love. And I am joined by Gary Butterfield. Gary, say hi to the people.
Hello.
Wave to them. Blow them kisses.
Wave to the people.
Is this the largest automobile that you can afford?
Huh? This is the best microphone that I could afford.
Okay.
or that I could have someone afford.
Yes.
A very generous man afford for me.
Yes. A very generous listener could gift.
Yes. It is the largest though. I've been into a restaurant, and I don't know if anyone else thinks this is funny, but if someone says, like, I want the best of something, like someone will be like, can I get the best, the best, you know, beer that you have on tape or tap or something like that.
Oh,
I put my hand on their arm and I say, he means biggest. And then like with food too, like someone's like, well, which of these steaks is better? It's like, you know, this one. It's like, okay, I'll have the better one. And it's like, oh, he means the bigger one. And I don't know, you know, it's not really an insult or anything like that. And it just confuses the waitresses, but I think it is.
Then what's the point?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's to confuse the waitress.
Okay. Poor waitress.
I just like the idea of conflating bigger with better.
She's just trying
things,
to get
which
her
is
associates.
Clearly not better. Aw. Yeah.
She doesn't need this shit.
That's true. That is true.
Yeah.
Lover listeners will recognize that I was not on the first episode about The Walking Dead.
No. Otherwise,
great omission.
Otherwise, you would have corrected our many, many inaccuracies.
It's probably true.
It was just me and Ben. It was like 3 hours after my normal bedtime.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, equivocating and making excuses, a level pastime. However, this is 400 days. This came out of nowhere, didn't it? Like, they announced it at E3, and I kind of thought it was going to be like a new, like, mid-season or mini-series, but it's one episode of, like, mini-sodes.
Yeah, it bridges the gap. It definitely came out of nowhere. Not so much, I mean, all announcements come out of nowhere by nature of the very word.
Even the announcement, but it's just kind of like, oh, wow, oh, here's this thing.
Yeah, well, what it was there was so little time between the announcement and the release.
Yeah, I suppose.
So it was just like, this is coming out in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, shit. You know, okay. Great. And I had no idea. I didn't even really know they were working on it. And that could just be me. Like, I just don't follow them on, you know, Twitter or whatever. Like, they probably, you know, maybe announced it. But
Yeah,
I didn't know they were working on it. And it was just a very nice bonus because I was expecting to wait significantly longer for more Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I was expecting them to go, you know, full season two. Like, I thought 400 Days was just going to be the, you know, the first episode of season two. But I like what we got.
I really like what we got.
Yeah.
Like, I would not want this to supplant season two.
No.
But as a kind of an experiment in storytelling and mm-hmm. world building and to bridge the gap, I don't think it could have been much better.
No. And like, so we should say, if you're listening to this and you haven't played 400 Days, go ahead and do it. It's going to take you about like an hour, maybe something.
I think my time clock is 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty leisurely with these.
Yeah.
So
it's five short stories, and you have to like view them as vignettes or more like portraits of these main characters through this thing. So it's like $5 if you already have The Walking Dead. We can't recommend it highly enough. If you need to go play it, you know, go ahead and pause this. It'll still be here in Instacast or Downcast or whatever you use. But that is your fair warning. This is a bonus level, and we're going to spoil the shit out of some of this stuff. And it doesn't make sense because these are 20 minutes a piece. So
well, the other thing too about so not only should you you should play it before you listen to this, and then if you're not. The market for this is for fans of The Walking Dead.
Right.
So, like, if you're listening to this at all or at all interested in The Walking Dead or at all interested in 400 Days, you probably played the first season. You know, like, they kind of make some nods about this being, you know, standalone, or you can start with this. Like, you can pre-generate, you know, the storyline behind you.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that's a really suboptimal way to do it.
Right.
The Walking Dead is getting into that weird kind of, like, Lord of the Rings movies thing where, like, you know, a lot of people went and saw Lord of the Rings 1, and then I bet, you know, 95% of the people who went and saw the second one in the theater saw the first one. You know, there's like significantly less drop off.
Mm-hmm.
You're just kind of in for the whole thing. So,
right.
You know, and if you played Walking Dead, you probably liked it enough to where you don't need us to convince you to get it.
Yeah, it's objectively good. Yeah. So yeah, you're definitely right. You've probably played this, and just by seeing the title of this, whatever it ends up being, you know what's mm-hmm. up. So yeah, I mean, like, why don't we jump into this? I mean, do we want to talk about the format, or do we want to let it kind of unfold?
Let's talk about kind of. Do you want to touch on a little bit of the individual stories, just kind of stuff that we liked, and then talk about the format as it kind of comes together?
Yeah.
The format reveals itself.
It does.
If not right on the page, and maybe, you know, there was a press release somewhere that said what it was going to be, but I went into it blind.
Me too.
And I think that's a cool way to go into it too. If you've got an open mind and you're not expecting just more of the same.
Yeah. So you start out and you're looking at this bulletin board that has five kind of photographs on it with different names. And as you mouse around, as they flutter in the breeze, you notice that they, they're different missions. So it's like a mission select kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. And you have your choice. You can do whatever order you want.
Yeah.
Which one did you? And I think I kind of picked a suboptimal one to do first.
Which did you do first?
I did Bonnie.
You did Bonnie. Okay.
Yeah.
So why don't we do like one each until we get to the last one, which should be Shell.
Yeah, I recommended you play that one last.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, do you support that, or was that? Did you think that had that worked out well?
It's not like so. When you said play that one last, it seemed like the most significant. Like just kind of like, oh, this is going to be the most significant one, and I agree that that is really, really strong. I'm not sure if it necessarily needs to fall last. However, I agree that for the purposes of choosing which order to talk about these things, that makes the most sense of anything to talk about last because it does have the most thematic resonance.
Yeah, that's kind of why I thought it. Like, you know, there were certain ones that I would feel a little bit disappointed if I had done them last. The same way I was a little disappointed that I did this one first.
Mm-hmm.
So Bonnie, you know, you're introduced to this new character, Bonnie, and essentially it is, a totally different, you know, different establishment, none of the same characters
right. You've
met with, and you get this idea that they've got their own, you know, I like that the idea that they have their own kind of colony with this. So immediately, like, I love how it tells you there are other groups of people who are out there surviving mm-hmm. that have their own complicated relationships. Like, it has this implied backstory for all these characters that would fit in with, like, the, you know, the characters you're used to in The Walking Dead, you know?
Right. Yeah, they're out there, and, like, each of them, you know, the beginning thing, you know, they say this is 400 days, and the ultimate kind of section of this takes place 400 days after the, you know, outbreak or whatever, 400 days after some kind of, poorly defined event that made this whole thing happen. But each of these chapters is, you know, a certain number of days after the outbreak. And mm-hmm. Bonnie's, I think, is like midway through, something like
that.
Yeah,
it's significantly through. It's not, you know, one of the like very early ones.
Yeah, it's still pretty bad. Like,
yeah. Yep. And it's you know, and it's cool too because it is a so Bonnie, you know, I like that Bonnie is so kind of explicitly damaged.
Right.
You know?
And she's a junkie. She's an addict.
Yeah. Yep. Part of the reason why I didn't... So the kind of the big... part of the reason why I felt a little less satisfied with it, even though I liked... You know, and then she's got... It's like super good dialogue. Like, it was a good thing to start off with, mm-hmm. letting me know that the writing chops were still there. I kind of... Not quite like accidentally, but kind of like slipped a click and made... Ended up smashing what's her head in the face.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wonder if I did, because this game has this weird, you know, ability to control what I do mm-hmm. without me being like active about it. I don't know if you guys talked about it on the bonus level, but I think I've talked about it in like a Watch Out for Fireballs extra so thing, but like the first Walking Dead game has the distinction of being like one of the only video games, like that last scene where you're choking out the guy. And it has that awesome mechanic though, where it stops prompting you to do it, to mm-hmm. tap the button.
Right.
And if you stop, he gets the upper hand. But I was so invested that I was just pounding on the keyboard at that point. And I just kept doing it. Like, and that's such a cool thing.
Yeah, the situation resolves itself of its own momentum.
Yeah, yeah. And it creates that momentum in you, like where you're playing a game, but there is a more direct relation between the keys I was pressing and what was happening on screen.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like the interface melted away. I wonder if it was something like that. Like, I wonder if everybody, there's some kind of, you know, trickery behind the scenes that is getting people to do this. Do you know if you cannot brain her?
I have no idea. I mean, I did the exact same thing. I mean, I ended up hitting her, you know, so we should probably define. So Bonnie is a recovering heroin addict, it's implied, who has kind of met up with this older married couple. And the husband is sweet on her, whereas the wife is suspicious, right? So you have this, you know, brief, you know, flirtation out in the woods and, you know, just in Walking Dead style. You can decide, you know, how overt you want it to be and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But the wife is suspicious of you anyway. And there are these other bandits, malevolent survivors who are coming after you for some reason or another. I think it's because the wife stole their backpack.
Yeah, maybe? She stole some supplies from them.
Yeah. And so...
Did you...
Good.
Leland says, you know, what do you have in there? And she says she has a surprise for him. Mm-hmm. Did you expect like a big stinger? Like at some point it was going to show them open the backpack and it was going to be like a baby bib or something, like the, just the saddest thing.
It's like baby food. It's like a bunch of Gerbers or something.
Yeah. Like it's still, and we're not going to eat, you know, something, some kind of just stinger that, like, you know, she had a surprise for him and she never gave it to him. And
it was like a whole birthday cake or something. It's like, how did this last this long?
A backpack full of... Well, I don't know how it got smashed, but I got you a birthday cake, Leland.
Yeah, I figured it was Marcellus's briefcase. You know, it didn't matter what was in it.
It doesn't matter what. I was just expecting them to make it more hurty.
Right.
Because that's what happens.
Yeah. But when they're chasing after you, there's a situation where you pick up a piece of rebar and you're huddled behind a tractor and somebody's coming around a corner and you have to, you know, brain them. I'm not sure if you do or don't have to hit them out. But it was a really effective ending because her head fucked up.
Yeah, her eye pops out.
Yeah.
And as they do.
She goes full.
Yeah. There are also spoilers for the the comic as well. Apparently,
I better mark that. Okay.
Yeah, like just bleep it. Read the comic though. If you haven't been reading the comic is good.
Like
in my opinion, the show is the least, like, show's good. It's the least of the three.
I did game, comic, and then show, and I'm happy I've done all three. However, that seems like the proper order in which to appreciate these things. So
you brain her and you can kind of apologize to her, or if you have no heart, you can not do it and everything. And then husband comes along and they have kind of an uncertain future at that point.
Right.
You know, what's going to happen there?
Propose a three-way as she's laying there bleeding out.
Like that twist.
Yeah.
Boy, like... Telltale has drawn fire with their recent decisions in the Walking Dead franchise, as their characters are just braining one another in order to finger them while unconscious.
did you fess up to her? Did you fess up to Leland?
No,
I did.
No, my thought was, you know, at the end of the day, what is going to result in him being happier?
No, I figured there was. I'm standing there holding a piece of rebar.
How does that unrelated rebar?
Yes.
I got you this rebar you wanted. How does he react?
He's like, how could you do this? Like, it was really, you know, it was nothing. Just like, I didn't want this. You know, so it's really textured and complicated, you know, because he obviously was flirting with you, you know.
Yeah, he already, you know, feels for you a little bit. But they also, when they do the dialogue really well with like a real soft touch, because when you're running away, like there are still kind of hints that, you know, that's not like a totally loveless marriage or anything like
that.
Right. Like he still has a lot of affection for her even before she died. It's not like a, you know, I didn't know what I had until I lost it. Like he was just, you know, torn and
Yeah, as you do,
and then, you know, Bonnie's significantly younger, which is probably a part of it too.
Yeah, you know, so. They've all obviously been through some shit, so they were closer than they otherwise would have been. But like, so even if you don't fess up, I mean, like in mine, I said, yeah, I did it, and he was like, you know, you better run, or else, you know, you're not going to make it. And so that's what led to her running. Like, how did yours end?
The two of them leave.
Oh, really? Wow.
Might leave together, yeah.
And do they both end up at the camp?
No, Leland's not there.
Okay.
Which, again, is something I kind of like. Like, that happens a few times, and I just like this idea that, like, of course, you know, like, 200 days have passed. Like, who knows what happened to that dude?
Yeah.
Like, he very well could have been murdered by zombies or, you know, found out.
Right.
Or a number of things, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet.
So then, yeah, so you know, you do that, it gives you back, sends you back to the interface and everything like that. And I, you know, at that point figured out what was happening, but that was the first point I was really excited, even though that was not my favorite one to start on. I really liked, you know, I was like, okay, great. This is what I'm in for.
Yeah.
Like these micro scenarios.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And so when you finish these chapters, you know, the person who you are looking at in these interstitial segments and the person you play at the end, you know, takes the photograph down. And this bulletin board is outside of this truck stop, diner kind of place, a greasy spoon. You know, everybody, like all these events center around this one place, right?
Yeah.
And everybody.
What happened to all those people who have their picture on the bulletin board that she doesn't go collect? Those poor bastards.
Yeah, I know. Like,
they didn't look interesting enough to save.
Day 726, somebody will find me, I swear.
Yeah, I know. Like day 4,000. Like, the zombies have invented a crude hovercraft. they yeah. prowl the wastes looking for gladiators for their slave pens.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
Yeah. So, get on it, Robert Kirkman.
Ah! Well, the comic has to go somewhere eventually.
The Flying Dead. The Hovering Dead.
The Hovering Dead.
Hover bikes.
Oh, Millpool. Yeah. So you did that one first. I did Vince first, actually.
Oh, cool.
I like that one a lot.
Yeah, Vince is great.
Yeah, Vince. So he's a prisoner who's on the way to prison. And I think
you play the beginning first. You play what happened.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. So it's him with a gun outside of the pharmacy that episode one takes place in.
Yep. And he shoots somebody. You don't get to control that part.
No.
There's a guy.
No, you don't.
And then what happened? So I threw the gun in the trash can because the timer was running out quick.
So did I. Yeah.
There's also a marker on the roof. Can you throw it up on the roof?
Maybe.
That's what I was guessing. And you probably still, of course, you still get caught. But I wonder if it plays out different.
Right. Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, like, maybe if I just ran with the gun, would have been able to ice the police and then
get away. Yeah. It becomes a totally different game. The streets are overrun with Vince's.
yeah, but he's helping out his brother. It's, you know, some kind of deal gone bad, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you end up in a you know, prison bus on the way to, I think, whatever facility that Lee's headed to.
Yep.
Like and feels like the same highway that he's on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Vince, he's an Asian dude, and he's on this bus with these two other criminals. Mm-hmm. You know, one of which is a white collar guy. I forget his name. And the other one's a Pete.
Yeah. Potentially. He denies it,
you know.
And they add so the kind of the trick part is like, so one of the things, this scenario and the one with Wyatt,
mm-hmm.
One of the things I really like about The Walking Dead is that the friendships feel really real.
Right.
Like when characters know each other before they come along, which doesn't happen that often in the first episode because, you know, Lee is an unknown entity.
Right.
But this introduces characters who have known each other for a while and all the relationships feel really lived in.
Mm-hmm.
Like the people kind of palling around and giving each other shit is really well written.
Right.
And real, you know, just like very authentic feeling. So he knows both these dudes.
Does he?
He didn't. Yeah, I definitely got that from this. I could be wrong about that, but that was the impression I got. If they don't, take back everything I say, and everything should, you know, feels way too lived in and comfortable. So everything I said, but I thought that he knew them.
No,
like maybe just from like the long bus ride.
That's possibly the case. But like this was the first one I played. I had like no idea how to role play them, so I was kind of more erring towards silence. Just kind of like, you know, I felt like a school bus almost.
Yeah.
Like I don't know you. I'm just gonna
yeah. And that's why it could be either way. Like maybe that's the fact that I started talking to them. I started kind of palling around with them, and it implied this relationship. But you were quiet, which you know didn't imply the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, both of which work.
Right.
And it's also, I love how it just, like, the whole thing just takes place on this bus. Like, it's very claustrophobic.
Mm-hmm.
And you're, you know, literally in chains. Like, there's no movement
right.
to this whole scenario until the end. And kind of that, so you learn about the two guys. One of them, you know, was accused of having sex with a 15-year-old girl.
Mm-hmm.
So 15, they're really spreading the moral ambiguity. Like, 15, not, you know, 7.
Right.
He denies it. The white-collar guy just denies nothing. You know, made tons of money fucking over people. Like, it was like an Enron kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I liked that his, like, you know, that conversation allowed me to say fuck Wall Street
and, yeah, get everybody to say yeah, yeah, great. It's a wonderful, wonderful moment. And then, you know, because zombies, like, all chaos breaks loose. Well, the two other prisoners start fighting first.
Yeah, yeah. They obviously have beef.
Yep. And chronologically, isn't this the first reveal that, like, people just come back without being bitten or anything?
Right. This is day two. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's just kind of, you know, chronologically, this is the first time anybody could know this.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Which I wonder if, like, the way that these characters are going to fit into the second season, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't get all of them to go to the colony. Or you can not get all the ones to go to the colony. But the somebody knowing that this early on could have ramifications.
Right.
Because it happens a little bit later in the main season, right?
Yeah, I forget. It happens at least like 2 months in.
Yeah, I think it's at least in the second episode.
Yeah, it's the second episode, which is a month after they have been, you know, fending for themselves in the hotel when they find Ben and the rest of his high school band or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the one of the prisoners kills another one and turns into one of them. The guard shoots him.
Yeah, yeah, he's strangling somebody, and the guard just out of hesitation, you know, shoots him. And the
not
guard
out of hesitation.
Well, yeah, I mean, just kind of like
anxiety.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, which is a kind of hesitation. Let's, you know, be clear. No, he shoots him, and then like there's a good portion of it while this guy is, you know, laying there shot, where it's just kind of like, okay, what do you do? Because this guard doesn't want to get caught. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a little bit of the you know, the fear of the of you know, the worst people living against the worst people dead, right?
Yeah. Yep. 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 And that's solved though, because the guy comes back to life.
Yep.
The zombie prisoner, and he kills the other prisoner.
Right.
Right. And everybody freaks out, and then the guard ends up getting bit.
Right.
And falls over. Yes, that's the sequence. It's a little bit like there's a lot of stuff that happens in like a relatively short period of time.
Yeah, it's such a small space that it's hard.
Yeah.
I
think that's chronology. And the other cop decides just to book it.
Yeah, yeah. He leaves because the bus eventually starts getting stormed by walkers.
Yeah. Well, not yet. That doesn't happen just yet.
Eventually.
So the big decision you're getting at this point is like you have to get the gun because the dead zombie. Is and the cop's going to come back too. That didn't play in. But the dead zombie is kind of straining against his chains. His foot's going to fall off. And you know, you can get the shotgun, but you don't get any keys,
right?
Or anything like that.
Yeah, it's I forget what it was, but like somebody falls on somebody else who has the shotgun, so you have to like move them.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Yeah. You fall. Yeah, you flip over the cop, and you get the shotgun, and you can't shoot the chain.
Nope.
For some reason, which I guess like maybe that wouldn't work in real life. Movies have taught me that, but I thought it would.
Yeah, yeah. So it eventually comes down to like the Saw situation where you have to decide which one of the guys you're going to blow their foot off of because everything else you try doesn't work.
And they tell you like, you know, this is not, you're going to unchain this person, but what's it going to do to their foot? Like somebody just says it like, what the fuck's that going to do to a foot?
Right.
And it's The Walking Dead. So if you're going to commit injury to something, it's going to take multiple hits.
Right.
Like, there's nothing clean. It's not going to shoot and then cut away and then, you know, credits.
Mm-hmm.
You had to shoot it a bunch of times.
Right.
Whose foot did you shoot?
I shot the amphibophiles.
I shot that guy, too. Even though, well, the other thing I was talking about, too, is that guy is much more principled. Like, they're really muddying the moral waters because the potential statutory rapist was... they go out of their way to show him as being, you know, standing up to the cop, you know, to being, you know, like a better, like more honorable dude.
Mm-hmm.
Like he says, like in prison, like if he did something, he'd say it.
Right.
You know, and everything. But I still ended up shooting his foot.
Yeah. Well, it's probably because you're racist because he is, you know, Hispanic.
He didn't look very Hispanic. Well, the reason I was racist, I just kept clicking on Vince's face and it wouldn't do it. And no matter how hard I tried, he wouldn't kill himself.
Oh, damn. Well, he was in the middle, so it wouldn't have worked.
Well, I know, but at that point...
It would only save one person, not...
Yeah.
Not
I guess that's true, and then a white person would die, so I can't have that. It'd be a zero-sum game.
Why am I hee-heeing that? That's awful. Yeah.
No. There's only two races in the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
At the end. Blacks and whites. True.
And then Glenn.
Yeah, and Glenn. Zombies and real people. But yeah, so I ended up shooting his foot, and then you can escape, and he has a very grisly death.
Yeah.
And this turns out to be the good ending for you, kind of weirdly. Like, this killing the pedophile guy, who, even though despite the fact that he seemed kind of like less selfish and greedy, is what causes you to go to the colony at the end.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yep.
Can you elaborate on that?
There's not too much there. Like, I think that, like, when I've read online and everything, the kind of speculation is that, because Justin's not, I think Justin is the Wall Street guy. Mm-hmm. And Justin is the, when you leave with him, like, he's not there at the end with the colony.
Right.
So, you know, he either, I don't know, man, that seems like it would damage your trust. Maybe the other guy did. I definitely shot the you know, pedophile guy and went with the colony.
Yeah, me too. Like, I had everybody go with the colony at the end.
Yeah, and those are the end choice you're making. So we keep alluding to it. The end choice you make is what causes you to go or not, which, you know, I keep slipping into Watch Out for Fireballs mode, but everybody who's listening to this knows that.
Yeah, so right.
Should stop trying to just explain.
Wow, so did I just, like, inexplicably hit everything right?
If everyone went, you did.
Okay.
And how do you define right?
Well,
it's probably better for them to go, but since the fact that not everyone has to go means that it's not going to have, you know, anything more than a story impact.
Right.
On the game. Like, it reminds me of, and we'll talk about it at length on the next Watch Out for Fireballs, but when we were talking about Indigo Prophecy,
right,
which doesn't, you know, is not, you know, it's an adventure game with these kind of, you know, similar kind of choices. And there's something where it's like, it's better to fail, like, some quick time events because it makes you have a better result.
Mm-hmm.
But none of the results have, like, impact other than just telling a different story.
Right.
You know? So, like, that's one of the things that's so great about this is that, like, it's all about the journey.
Yeah.
There's no winning or losing in The Walking Dead.
Yeah. And that's a little bit counterintuitive since they show you a score page. Basically, at the end, it's kind of like, who went to the blah, blah, blah? It's like, obviously, you won.
Well, but if again, like, it depends on what you think of the win condition, though.
Right.
You know, like, so it has, like, a less explicit win condition.
This colony could be Woodbury, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, absolutely. Like, this colony could end up being the villains in the next one, which is what I think is going to happen. Like, there's going to be some kind of problem. Not necessarily villains, but, like, you're not going to be set up as, like, you know, you're not playing the group of people you're going to play next time.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens if nobody goes?
Right.
You know, then it just, like, introduces just five new random yahoos. They're not going to write for that.
No.
So I think these guys are going to be set up in opposition, or at least just parallel to, like, this is just going to be a colony that exists.
Right.
In the next one.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thought.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm torn because I want to go back and, like, make the opposite decision, you know,
Me too.
but
just to see what happens.
I kind of don't, though, because this feels like my story.
Yeah. And that's the thing too about, and I think we talked about that, but, like, I wanted to play The Walking Dead again, but I don't think I'd make different decisions.
Right. Because,
like, I don't think I'd be capable of it.
So went with my gut. Like, I can't put up, you know, for as laid back and easygoing as I am, I can't put up a chart that has, like, my previous decisions and then go counter.
But so, yeah, it's so weird because I can play, like, other games where choices matter.
Yeah.
And I'll do a play. I think it's because it has, like, an unbroken narrative. Like, the fact that, you know, what you do is going to make that difference in the next thing means, you know, because I can play a playthrough of Fallout, and that's the good guy playthrough, and that's canonical.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do a bad guy playthrough, and it's just an alternate reality, and I just want to see what happens. Like, that one doesn't count, though.
Yeah.
You know, I have no problem doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Walking Dead's different, though.
Yeah.
It handles that a little bit better.
Yeah. Who did you play after Vince? Or not after Vince, but who do we want to talk about? Okay, Russell. I like Russell.
I like Russell a lot.
Yeah.
Like, this is really cool. So, again, really laying on one of the strengths of the series, like, really unpredictable.
Yeah.
Like, the Russell, not so much. Russell just seems like a good guy.
Yeah, he's kind of a yokel, I like that too. A little bit.
Yeah, just like a young, well, like, clueless kid.
Yeah.
You know, kind of naive.
Mm-hmm.
Naive kid. But Nate, who's the other main character you run into, like, fucking psychopath in a way that, like, you know, because, like, movie psychopaths are always, like, you know, just doing dumb shit. But, like, it's the same way, like, whenever we talk, we have to make an alien in fiction, it's kind of dumb because, to me, like, a true alien would behave with motivations that we can't understand.
Right.
you know, and there's no way to write for that, right? Same thing with like a demon or anything like that. Like one of all my favorite bits of fiction, it's part of why I'm so into Lovecraft, is that like the motives of the antagonist are totally inscrutable.
Right.
And to me, that's how it should be. And Nate plays, you know, insane enough to be really unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
Like even up until the end, I was unsure if he was fucking with me, like how serious he was.
Yeah. Like Nate is probably two shades removed from like Frank Booth from Blue Velvet.
Yeah. You know? Like it's just kind of on edge in a really convincing way. Like at times kind of likable, you know, at times kind of like, you know, or not likable, but seems like he has your back.
Right.
Seemingly genuine. And then just so mercurial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that character is awesome. He might be my favorite character sketch in this episode.
Yeah. He goes back and forth from just fucking with you to asking you to rate the sexiness of what a zombie used to be while he doesn't roll the window up as she is biting for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Super psychopathic. And like, not at the risk of getting into, you know, too far down a rabbit hole, like, you know, as somebody who spent a lot of time with my father's drunken friends growing up, there's like an element of that. That's like,
there
that's
is.
True. Like where it's just kind of like when you're a kid, you're around an adult, you don't understand why they're doing things or what it really means to do them,
mm-hmm.
you know? And this episode, this little like vignette does a really good job of like portraying what that could be like,
mm-hmm.
you know? Like I never had, and especially the sexuality angle, like I never had, you know, obviously I didn't grow up in a zombie apocalypse, but like some of these scumbags and even like my dad would, you know, say, you know, be like, look at that girl, you know, and I was like way too young for that. Mm-hmm. Or maybe not objectively too young, but I wasn't ready for it.
Right.
And I wasn't going to be like, and it always made me feel like uncomfortable and horrible mm-hmm. in a way that is, you know, really hard to pin down. Yeah. And this is that same kind of thing. Just him just like, you know, tell me about the girls there. Tell me about, you know, where do you, like, tell me about their breasts. Like, just like being this kind of real skeezy guy about sex to a young person.
Yeah.
Hit like a real nerve with me.
It's putting you on the spot about something you're not ready for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And something that you should, you know, that is an intensely personal thing to be ready for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you can make the argument that Clem needs to be ready to shoot zombies and cut her hair. You can't make the argument that Russell needs to be ready to rape Poon. Like there's no, that's not a saleable skill in the zombie apocalypse. Like,
right.
You know, you don't gather people in fucking State of Decay based on how good they are at that.
Right.
Like that's not a thing. So real good at that, like really uncomfortable.
Yeah. And there are multiple opportunities throughout this to just like try and up and shoot him. Like,
totally.
Like you have every opportunity to get out of this. And
yeah.
It's really just a question of how much do you put up with it?
Yep. Because he's doing something you need. Like he's providing, which is again, a real like post-apocalyptic zombie lesson,
mm-hmm.
you know, like what are you willing to compromise to get this resource? In this case, it's like transportation
mm-hmm.
that you need. And there's an element of fear to it too, because you don't get the gun, or you get the gun when he first shows up. Cause you pull it out of the glove compartment, but he's also like in a position of power over you.
Yeah.
So
this is a bit of a through line because I think that his truck comes up in a couple of other scenarios because it has those lights at the top of it, right? Like the mm-hmm. Jeep, you know, I don't know what those are called because, you know, I drive a fucking Chrysler. So,
yeah,
you know,
I mean, I don't know what they're called either.
Yeah. But yeah, just like I don't know.
Yeah. So the kind of big. So, yeah, he does this. He kind of terrorizes you, you know, with sexuality,
mm-hmm.
not like terrorizes you sexually, kind of terrorizes you with sexuality and just kind of being unhinged. And then when you guys are under danger, like again, you kind of need him,
right?
You know, like this people who take a shot at you, like unprovoked.
You're outside the Greasy Spoon and you're just like there, like explicitly to get supplies, right?
Yeah.
Yep. And you're under fire. So immediately you should know like, oh, yep. It's a camp. Gotta go.
Right.
But then, you know, it becomes like, okay, we got to go in and ice these dudes.
He even says it. It's like, you know, we're not going to, nobody fucking gets away with this, mm-hmm. you know, or something like that. Like tons of clues. I'm not saying when I say it's like ambivalent and unpredictable, it's just not like, he's definitely crazy,
mm-hmm.
but to, you know, to the degree that he is crazy.
Right.
It's kind of up in the air. You do some mechanical things and you find out that it's this old couple who's there and the wife has been shot at your return fire.
Right.
And he's like, why don't we?
Oh, she was shot. She was not shot in mine.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder.
So
I provided her fire. I didn't do. I wonder what else I might have done.
there was a point like when Nate was going ahead, I chose to like to pull on him.
I did not do that.
To draw on him. It was like, fuck this, I'm out.
Oh, hey, I did not do that. Yeah, Tell me about that.
So I did, and he was like, oh, you've got to be fucking kidding me. Mm-hmm. is really what it was. And I forget if it gave you a gut check, if it was kind of like, okay, not really, or not. But it made me continue.
So you still went with him into the thing?
Yeah. You know, it did give me a gut check. It was just kind of like, as he was arguing, saying, you know, come the fuck on, you could shoot him, but then just leave. But I
continue. Well, now I know I need to replay it and see if I can shoot him. Yeah. Like, or at least just watch on YouTube. I'm really interested to see if you can do that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it'd be real easy to go back and play that scenario. It's 20 minutes. Yeah. I drew on him and then decided not to go through with it. So I don't know if that was the difference or not, but it was a husband and wife, both perfectly healthy, if not elderly, when I got in there.
They're not perfectly healthy, Cole.
Well, none of us are. We're all infected. We're all the Walking Dead.
That's true. But yeah, so she was mortally wounded. Maybe not mortally wounded. She was wounded in mine. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you had to make this decision. Like, and Nate says, earlier you had confided that the group you were in would just kill people and take their stuff, you know, at the slightest provocation.
Right.
And the crazy thing is, like, when Nate says it to you, his eyes are, like, almost cartoonishly wide, and he says it the exact same thing. He says, should we just take them, like, or, like, he's just a cold bastard, take people's stuff. And he's like, what do you say, Russell? Should we be a cold bastard and take people's stuff? Mm-hmm. And his eyes are all wide, and it leaves you enough of, like, a window where, like, he might be kidding.
Right.
Like, he might just be giving you shit, because he's been giving you shit this entire time.
Yeah.
And that's when I walked. And I'm like, of course not. There are things you don't do.
Yeah.
You know, and walked out, and then he shoots them anyway.
Right.
And you live with that for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. That's what I did too. That's ultimately how it ended for me.
Yeah. I wonder, if you say to do it, I wonder what happens. Like, if you go with Nate, I wonder if he ends up at the colony, which I'd be surprised if he did, but
right.
Not the colony, but the camp. Yeah. But this is a really cool, this is one of my favorite, like, I mean, I like all of these scenarios a whole lot,
yeah.
But this was really cool. Like, I really liked that.
Yeah. It was really good.
So by process of elimination, Wyatt.
Wyatt, yes. I liked Wyatt's a lot, too.
I did, too.
Yeah.
Never mind that
he looks like a bearded frog.
Yeah, he's a bad model.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, like, again, like, people being pals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? There is an implied history here that is never spoken out, you know, outright. But it's, you know, it could be they're just both drug enthusiasts, mm-hmm. And it could be that they have been, you know, lifelong friends that just decided to get out in some kind of Pineapple Express esque, you know, antic.
Hollywood, don't listen to that. We did not need like a. I guess we had a.
Yeah, we had This Is the End, which is awful, by the way.
Oh, I like This Is the End. That's going to be a different episode. Really? You thought it was awful?
Okay. So I thought that it was made for like five people and all of which were in the movie.
I don't know. We can talk about that at some other time.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not going to, it's not high art. I'm not going to like die on that hill, but
yeah,
I liked it a lot.
Yeah. My mind could probably be changed just because the stakes are so low.
I don't need to change the line. It's a comedy. Like if you didn't think it was funny, you didn't think it was funny. So that's,
I laughed until I almost pissed my pants at certain points, but just like as a whole, like as a gestalt, it was just kind of like,
maybe you just thought it was a little bit in bad taste for what it was. See, I kind of thought it wasn't
bad taste either. It was just kind of like,
artistically bereft. I mean, to make it for such a limited, like masturbatory. Is that what you,
I felt it was masturbatory.
See, I thought it was playing with a lot of that.
Yeah.
And maybe that just comes down to a perceptual thing that cannot be pinned down. Like, whether it is, you know, kind of messing around with some of that stuff or whether it's doing it on purpose.
I went into it expecting nothing, and I was like, I knew nothing about it. It was just kind of like, oh, my family was in town. Yeah, whatever. Mm. I'll watch this movie. They're paying for my ticket, and I want to spend time with my family and see a thing. I didn't expect everybody to be playing themselves.
Gotcha. I knew that conceit going in.
Yeah, yeah. If I knew that and if I could have prepared myself for it, but really Craig Robinson was the only one that I was like, oh yeah, I can believe this person playing himself. Whereas everybody else was like,
Well, they were playing like
caricatures, you know, of themselves.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and I knew that going in, it was part of the appeal. Like, I'm like, that sounds funny to me.
Yeah.
Like, I, you know, they're taking, like, it's like extras.
Mm-hmm.
which I like a whole lot.
Yeah, yeah. So that's really all that it boils down to. Like when it went off the rails, and you had what was his name, Eastbound and Down, raping.
Yeah, Kenny Powers.
Yeah, when you had him with what's his name, White Trash, dude. As his gimp. Chatham Tanning, as his gimp. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's fucking hilarious.
Yeah. The thing about this at the end, too, is that I thought that the fact that it was so funny allowed it to be darker than I was expecting at almost every turn. Like, something would happen, it would be really dark. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, especially the stuff with him, everything after they leave. And then the kind of the design on the monsters and the actual, kind of sense of stakes to it. Which contrasted with how funny and goofy it was in a way that made the contrast stick out for both of them to me. Whereas it was funnier because I was seeking relief, and kind of scarier and more tense because I had just been laughing a moment before.
Right.
So,
yeah, I liked how their projected plot for Pineapple Express 2 was ultimately what happened.
Yeah, I like that a whole lot too.
Yeah,
and the. Funny stuff. I could have done with a few less dicks.
Yeah.
Probably in it. And I could have done with a little bit more I felt like I could have watched the party scene in the beginning go on forever.
Me too.
I could have watched Michael Cera, that character of Michael Cera.
This is Coke smell funny to you?
Yeah. I could have watched that guy for that performance for the rest of my life. It was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was real sad that there are a lot of people who didn't get very much to do. I would bet you there's gonna be really funny outtakes. I want to see Paul Rudd do some stuff since he's so eminently
I want to see Aziz Ansari do more than just die.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, or Martin Starr. Yeah. Any number of the people who just kind of died.
Mm-hmm. Emma Watson.
Yeah, and I thought she was gonna come back too. I was expecting her to get out of the trailer with Amazons or something like that. And I was well, shit.
Yeah,
they're going this way with it. But it is kind of a similar thing. Stoner adventures in genre land.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing here.
Yeah. But yeah, Wyatt, it's real cool. It's real moody, real dark. Mm-hmm. But it's you and your buddy, and you're kind of driving down this road, and you're trying to convince him as you're running from Jeep guy, could be Nate, who knows, I need to look at what the day numbers are, to put on his headlights because he's turned them off in an ill-advised attempt to remain stealth.
Yeah, and they're just arguing with it. Gets pretty, it's a little bit incongruous with the rest of the series. There hasn't been very much explicit comic relief in his one place.
Mm-hmm.
Their dialogue is real kind of loose and breezy together, and genuinely pretty funny. I like both these characters. I like Eddie a lot, which makes it a shame what ultimately happens with Eddie in either case.
Right.
And the big thing is you hit a cop, and I legitimately thought it was a zombie and was arguing that it was a zombie because that's what I thought it was.
Oh yeah.
I was not. And I was it was definitely a zombie, man. I was, cause that's why I thought I got a good look at it. And thought it was but I guess, Eddie is sure that it is not there.
Yeah. I was actually arguing that it was that it was a dude and then we needed to get out and check.
Gotcha. And was Eddie arguing with you?
No,
because he was arguing the other side for me.
So it was kind of like we agreed, and then it came down to who goes out and who goes out and looks.
Gotcha. Yeah. There's a funny bit too when you're looking for evidence of it, because the guy gets too far away to see him from the car. Mm-hmm. Where I looked in the glove compartment, and Eddie's there's not going to be blood in the glove compartment or something like that. And then my guy's just like, I don't know what to do. He's just trying anything.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the adventure game thing. You're going to click on everything,
right? Yeah. So I ended up going because I lost the rock, paper, scissors.
Okay. I did as well. I think that they did that for tension, just to make it feel like you could not go. But, yeah.
You can refuse to play, and then Eddie goes.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. And then the opposite thing happens. So whoever's going out and checking on the cop in the field of dead people, the guy with the truck comes back, and whoever's still in the car abandons whoever's not in the car, regardless of who it is.
Right.
So you can be Wyatt and abandon Eddie.
Oh, okay. And so in that case, he probably wouldn't go with the colony then, because he was the one who abandoned, not the person who was abandoned.
My guy was abandoned and did not go to the colony.
Oh, really? Wow.
And I don't know why. Like, I wonder what that, maybe it was because I was fighting against doing it so much. I don't know why that is.
Yeah. No, so we'll talk about it in the end, but regardless, you leave with a certain set of like values or priorities that a different person has.
Yeah. Right? Yep.
Yeah. Like that walk down that long road with the various clickables and the bloodstains and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So you got out and went after the person that you hit. Did you ultimately try and pick them up and carry them back to the car?
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. Because again, like I tend to play these games as like, hold on to your humanity.
Right.
Like, since I know, you know, there's something really freeing about The Walking Dead and there being no way to really lose, mm-hmm. or there being no right ending. Like, you're just crafting a narrative and it's mm-hmm. it's just a storytelling game ultimately. Like,
yeah.
In a way, like a choose your own adventure,
mm-hmm.
you know, with a scant puzzle. So like you can stick to your guns. Like, you know, I knew the game wasn't going to fuck me over. So I'm like, you know what? In my version of The Walking Dead, people try to hold on to their humanity and do mm-hmm. what they can, you know?
Yeah. I mean, again, you know, the Indigo Prophecy comparisons, it's aptly timed and also, you know, well, whatever, but you're both the actor and the director.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. So it's funny because all shit comes down. Cause as you're carrying, you know, this police officer back, you know, the zombies are coming at you. So you have to drop him and start, you know, popping caps, into these zombies. And then the truck guy comes and just, it's this confluence of events where it's like, yep, all the pressure's on and this guy left. And I don't know if I blamed Eddie or not.
No. I mean, you know, that guy was a murdering, you know, hillbilly of some kind. I have to assume.
Right.
It's also, the game like does a good, I mean, sometimes it's a little bit clumsy. Like, they do a lot of things when they're trying to set up this moral ambiguity. Like the fact that it's a cop and you're two stoners who, you know, were carrying, you know, talking about smoking weed earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And these are characters who probably do not like police officers.
Right.
You know, so they're trying to set that up, like saving my enemy mm-hmm. kind of thing. Like any kind of nods to that, I feel like they will throw in as much irony as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I felt like this was a little bit clumsier. The fact that it was a cop, I would have been just as fine if it was just anybody,
mm-hmm.
you know? But
see, I didn't even read that. Like the there was an implied enmity because I forget what the day count was, but like all laws are so far behind that it was kind of like, I don't care that we're talking about sick, nasty buds with crystals and the purple hairs. It's like,
yeah.
It's like no cop is going to be like, well, I'm going to blah, blah, blah.
I guarantee it's an intentional choice.
Okay.
Like, I'm not saying that it was meant, they didn't underline it. It's mm-hmm. not an important choice, but I guarantee you that's intentional.
Right.
And that's the reason why, like I would be willing to bet that's the reason why it was done that way.
Yeah.
Just to add a little bit of that to that. So,
yeah.
I also thought the rock paper scissors thing went on way too long. I kept drawing and I was getting really sick of it, and I'm like, isn't there a sense of danger? Like, there could be someone bleeding out or people coming after us. Yeah, like, quit it, you idiots.
I just kept doing, like, rock. And then, like, when I ultimately lost the Eddie said, you always draw rock, it's so stupid, man.
Yeah. He said something to, or like, yeah, when I lost, he said, nothing ever, paper never wins anything. It's just paper.
Right.
Cause that's what I tried, but yeah. Yeah.
But then, so Wyatt's on his own and then we are left with Shell.
Yeah. And Shell, I think, is the most substantial of these.
Yeah.
And it's the one that I find the most resonant with what came before.
Mm-hmm.
This. So yeah, Shell's in a colony. It's kind of tightly run. But they're pretty sustainable and, similar to Lee and Clem, like, she's raising her younger sister.
Yes.
In this. So you're going to run into that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's also the only one which has a passage of time internally.
Yes.
Within it. So it's taking kind of a longer view of the story.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. It starts out with Shell's younger sister. I forget her name. Whatever. Playing acoustic guitar, you know, it's kind of like, it's a nice little scene, but then the discussion comes like, oh, we should do this every week. You know, it could be like a little talent show. It's like, oh, why not? Right.
Mm-hmm.
But then the discussion turns to, well, it may or may not be against the rules. We should probably check, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, oh, this is different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And for a moment, I thought this was going to be the same colony. Is this where Russell left? It can't be because he goes back to the diner. But that's what I thought for a moment.
I think
I was like, yeah, this is kind of a, and you didn't quite realize exactly how stern Boss Man was going to be.
Again, don't know if this matches the day counts, but I think that Russell's situation takes place long after Shell's.
Maybe the beginning of it, but yeah, like you're probably right. So
yeah. But they're in this kind of, and there's like 6-7 people, so it's hardly a colony.
But I just keep throwing that around because it's like settlement.
Yeah, yeah. But they're there, and you're going to check on supplies, right?
Oh, and some people from the settlement are from the town from the end of the episode.
Oh, they're from
the people from the basement of the medical.
Yeah, they're from Crawford. They're from Crawford and Savannah. So they're talking about Vernon taking the boat. Like Vernon abandoned them too.
Yep, and Russell falls down next to what's her head, the lady you shoot in episode 2.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I can't remember her name now, but he falls down right next to her. Mm-hmm. So it is there are some references to the early thing. You know, nothing you did in the early ones actually matters.
Right.
So
yeah, but they're there. They're trying to survive, and they've got walkers chained up out back, which again, like nobody good in the series does that.
Well, they're doing it. It's interesting too, because they're doing it to protect against humans.
Mm-hmm.
Like it has nothing to do with, you know, it's not a zombie defense. It's a human defense.
Right.
And it fails. And this guy who doesn't speak English breaks in, and they're deciding what to do with them.
It's like that scene out of Fight Club.
Yeah. Like, and you know, and he was already beat up and everything. You don't know what to do with him, blah, blah, blah. And again, like in my version of Walking Dead, like you hold on to your humanity,
right,
like as tight as you can. But the group split, and then, and I thought, like, I was like, oh, this is a really short scenario. I thought that was going to be it, and it was going to play out more with Shell or with the little sister.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Like, I didn't think that I was going to flash forward, like, 100 days or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That was a real surprise for me.
Yeah. So you opted to keep him alive, then?
Yeah. Did you kill him?
No.
Because I wonder what happened, because the next thing that happens is so, you know, integral to like the choice that I made.
Mm-hmm, me too.
You know, it seems like it would follow. So I've got to watch the alternate playthroughs at least the alternate like scenario parts at least on YouTube, because I don't want to fuck up my personal narrative. But
right,
I get in there and check that out.
Yeah. So I let him live, and he went out, and then you know, in the
fucked you over.
In the intervening time, he came back and killed whoever sided with me. I forget the black guy.
Yeah.
I killed him, and then everybody's, you know, mourning his loss and blaming you for it, you know, if not directly, then indirectly.
Even though, like, the Boss Man guy is super fair about it. Like, he's just like, nope, you know, we went with your way, but this is the way that we have to do it. Like, he entertained your thing. Like, he's not a dictator.
No.
You know, he's not, like, villainous at all.
Right.
You know, there's no governor. And then your buddy decides to steal all your medicine and stuff, which I thought was a little weird. You know, if this had been like a full, like this felt like it could have almost been like a whole episode, and you could have, you know, seen Stephanie go and do all that stuff, and you don't.
Right.
So did you flee or did you shoot her?
Oh, I fled.
Yeah. We made the same decisions almost exclusively in this, because we're good people.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. But like, that's the weird thing, because you go so much with your gut and you're not sure if a common result is because they're guiding you towards that and just ultimately it happens, or if it's just because the people you choose to associate with have a similar gut.
If they are guiding you, they're hiding the strings really well.
Yes.
You know, and that's great. That's to be lauded. Because they set it up as like, you know, so one, you could, the reason why this is the one I think is the most resonant is because your little sister is like a little bit like an anti-Clem. Like, Clem, you are making the decision whether to shelter her or not.
Mm-hmm.
This little sister does not want to be sheltered.
No, in fact, she actively goes out into the wilderness on herself.
Yep.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, listen, we have to kill her. If we don't kill her, you know, the boss guy is going to hunt us down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, remember what happened to so-and-so? Like, you are the opposite. Like, you are placed in this position of, naivety.
Mm-hmm.
And this person you care for is the person who, you know, is more world-wise.
Mm-hmm.
In this new world. And that's really interesting, you know, rather than making the decision for someone else that you can no longer shelter them. You are playing a character who is inclined to shelter
yeah,
yourself and them.
Mm-hmm. And you know, like the, and that is, you know, because the younger sister is older than Clem was, like you get the sense that like what's the difference between a person who came of age in the old world versus came of age in the new world?
They say it, like a character says it. Character says, like, what does growing up in this world do to you?
Right.
You know, I think one of the responses you can say, like, I don't want to find out.
Right. Like, and that's a theme in The Walking Dead too, with either Clem or Carl or Sophia.
Carl, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, well, Carl, like, definitely.
Little Carl.
Serial killer in training, yeah.
Like that is a really, that's like the most interesting long play story in the comic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like how that character is developing.
Yeah.
But yeah, you choose, you know, get the hell out of Dodge or you shoot her. Yeah. And I think you can ask the little sister to do it.
Like, oh no.
Yeah.
It's like you're such a hard ass, go do it.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Totally. I wonder if it plays out like, you know, we caught you smoking this pack of cigarettes. I bet you want to smoke a whole pack. We caught you shooting a thief. Shoot this pack of thieves. Uh-huh. You know, I wonder if she'll actually do it or if she shrinks away.
Right. But I love that choice. I love how they present it to you. I mean, it's simultaneously incredibly overt. You know, it's a gun and then the keys to the RV, which are in the same drawer for some reason.
but it's also choice, like, drawer. It's my choosing drawer.
It's my choosing drawer. put on my decision hat. Yeah. but it's kind of like, oh, it's kind of like, oh, there's a third way or a second way, rather.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, yep, yep.
But yeah, I straight up broke through their wall.
Yeah, which fucked them over.
Yes, it did.
Pretty good. I wish there was a way to do it. Like, I thought when they talked about that secret passage out, I was like, oh, let's sneak out the fucking passage. Yeah. Like, you know, I guess the guy was like right outside the thing, but I'm like, there's a secret way to get out.
Yeah.
Just get out the secret way. Don't fuck up their wall. Yes. You know, and you do doom everybody there.
Mm-hmm.
Like later they talk about, God, is that, yeah, because the, at the camp, they talk about, someone says, what if, your little sister says, like, what if he's still looking for us?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Vince says, we went to that place and no one's alive there. Like, it's deserted.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, you know, the place probably was overrun,
mm-hmm.
you know? Yeah. So you do kill a bunch of your friends in order to, like, protect your little sister. I hope that, like, those characters play prominently.
Me too.
Because, you know, it's the only, like, pair that escaped. So, like, one of the things about the game is that, like, these people make these decisions with these relationships with people, but then they are individual entities. So it does a good job of defining themselves, but you don't get to actually see, you know, how they deal with it in relation to the people they made these choices with, mm-hmm. if that makes a sense.
Yeah.
And with Shell, you would.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that leaves everybody. All the pictures have been taken off the bulletin board.
Yep. And you become this new character, Tavia. And you go find the camp. You find out she's, like, you know, working for some encampment. You go there, and then depending on the decisions you can kind of argue them into coming with you.
Yeah.
Depending on the decisions they've made, though, they are more inclined or less inclined to do it.
Yeah. So for me, the holdouts were Wyatt and Russell.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Russell wasn't wanting to go away. And the argument that I made, kind of with information that Tavia would not have had, but I did because I played it, saying, like, mm-hmm. oh, people we ran into before, you might find them there. And that tickled Russell, saying, like, oh, your family might be there.
He's looking for his grandma.
Yeah, he's looking for his grandma. Yeah. I forget what ultimately made Wyatt come, but once Russell fell, he did too.
Yeah, I said something that didn't, I think in that dialogue option, something else was more appealing to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I said something else, and then something else made Wyatt not come. So the other three came with me, and Wyatt and Russell did not.
Hmm.
I know Bonnie comes with you, I think, no matter what.
Okay.
Which makes me wonder if she has, like, a steady role in the second one. Like, if there is going to be a protagonist, like, it would almost have to be her. Which I'm not crazy about. Like, she's probably my least favorite character in the set.
Yeah. 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 So that I liked the way that it ended. You know, it kind of like left me with more questions than answers, which is not a bad thing. I'm not opposed to that. But
no.
I think ultimately I'm just sad that season two isn't here right now.
Yeah.
For me to play.
I like that they did this though.
Me too.
Because like bridging this gap this way is gonna be really cool. And they didn't do it through like an online comic or something like that. Like
yeah.
You know, I'm glad they did it via play because that's what sets this apart. It's a really good interactive narrative. Mm-hmm.
And you just got the sense that these were just ideas that people who work at Telltale, you know, the people behind this game, that just they just had and wanted to do.
What it is to me is almost like experiments in like a writing workshop where the soul of drama. So you have to put your characters through hell. That is a rule of fiction. Bad things should happen to your protagonist all the time, almost completely. Otherwise there's not a story. That's almost always the case. Mm-hmm. Not always, but a lot of times that's the case. They don't have to be really grim. You can break it up with things, but people have to be put in difficult decisions or it's not interesting. And it's almost like, let's workshop the five best interesting decisions we can come up with, mm-hmm. That you could be making in this world.
Right.
What are dynamics and how would they change in this kind of situation, in this kind of world?
Right.
I was super successful. Mm-hmm. The other thing I wanted to say about the format is how awesome it is to do something like this every once in a while where you get a really wide picture of the world. Mm-hmm. By telling kind of a scatter story, scattershot story like this, mm-hmm. Here are five disparate things that are going on roughly the same, time, in the same year. I felt like it fleshed out what was going on a whole lot more than just kind of being zoomed in on a protagonist would.
You're not just following Rick and seeing the world through the people that he encounters.
Right. Right. And the things, a lot of things are happening concurrently and they're relating to each other. Even with Lee, that was done through traveling, mm-hmm. but it was so much more slow paced. This, just being kind of here's a snapshot of five different things.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to put together okay, now I have a more complete picture of this world. What's going on? There are roving bands of people in trucks, mm-hmm. fucking things over. There's a significant presence of people who don't speak English, like running into a colony of people who want the same thing that you do that you cannot communicate with. Mm-hmm. Inherently interesting.
Right.
Just very interesting ideas kind of being teased at.
Yeah.
In this.
This isn't a world full of Omid and Christas.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Which I love Omid and Krista. They're some of my favorite characters from season mm-hmm. one. And I hope that they turn up again at some point. But yeah, you're right. There is more peril out there.
Yeah. So really successful in that respect. Mm-hmm.
And it's not just nameless peril. It's not just roving bandits that you can feel happy about killing. It's not the cannibals, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Any number of these folks can just be bad people that you could see yourself as the protagonist of another story taking out.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's just kind of, further blurring those lines, mm-hmm. And doing it super successfully. I hope that there is a significant and steady human villain. If there's going to be an antagonist in this, and there wasn't the first one, but they need to keep with that, a really strong human antagonist in the second season.
Who was human antagonist in the first one?
Well, the there's not one set one, but then for the last two episodes, it's the guy who kidnapped Clem.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's Kevin Spacey. Steve Buscemi.
And then they have, it's... I think it's interesting that by the time you run into the kind of corrupt colony of people, it's already overrun. Mm-hmm. I think that they will not do that. I think we will see some kind of civilization that's not rebuilt into something struggling to civilizations in The Walking Dead struggle to kind of become utopias, mm-hmm. or never make it. They're in a state of flux trying to achieve something that you never can achieve, mm-hmm. or they make a compromise that is so fundamental to what we value as a society in order to function. It's every long-running society is corrupt and ruined.
Yeah.
Just about.
It's like The Stand. It's Vegas versus Boulder.
I do not know The Stand.
Okay.
But I take your word for it. But yeah, I mean, it's just, and then that's played through in all, in the comics and everything like that. There's always a dark secret if there's going to be, if things are going to have any kind of stability.
Right.
And I want to see a little bit more of that. I feel like the comic has proven that that can be done in multiple different ways.
Right.
I really like what it's doing now. Again, no spoilers for that, but you run into, groups of humans in the comic. Mm-hmm. And I like this current one a lot as a way that things could kind of dysfunction, like a plant would grow in radioactive soil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
yeah, so if they can keep this level up, Yeah. I'll buy a season two.
I was
going to buy it anyway.
What accounts for it, do you think? The golf. So I like Telltale in general, but there is a mammoth golfing quality between The Walking Dead and every other property they do. What causes that? Like, those Tales of Monkey Island are not as fun as, not as good.
I mean,
as this.
It can't be the source material because they've made games out of source material that I've liked before.
Yeah.
Right? They made the Strong Bad game. They made Monkey Island, obviously. The Jurassic Park game was, you know, awful. But
I've only heard that. I've never played that.
I've played it. It's not that great. Back to the Future, again, as well, which is perfectly passable and serviceable. I kind of think it's the people behind it. It might be Sean Vanneman and, you know, Jake Rodkin. It might be them. It might, like, just, I don't know.
It might be that, and it might be that it's the only drama one, or, like, dramatic one.
Yeah.
And it's also the least puzzle-focused.
Yeah.
Which I think is strong, because it's not like they do puzzles poorly.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's a really wide golf to me. And I like, I played through the first, I think, three seasons of Sam & Max, and I played Monkey Island, and liked them a lot.
Yeah.
They're good games.
Mm-hmm.
Not this good. not the game of the year good.
I fucking love the Strong Bad games, man. But
yeah. Well, that's always been a difference between us that we'll carry to the grave.
True.
yeah, that's probably not true. I'm not going to care. I mean, there will be a difference between us. I'm not going to. I guess that is true. Never mind. We will carry that to the grave. Yeah.
But just like there are any number of inconsequential things that we carry to our graves.
Yeah, that's true. Most of the things we carry to our grave don't matter at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. like I'm just trying to think of like all the dumb opinions I have that I could say with all, you know,
with all truth. Conviction in the world and the
truthfulness. Like, I'll carry this to my grave. Yeah.
It feels like a different format. It feels like the dialogue is put first. And it feels like every level of care has been put into these scenarios, whereas with other ones it's into the tone, but the tone in Walking Dead is really good, but like it's put into kind of this, what puzzle can we do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit more puzzle focused and a little bit too puzzle focused for my taste, in an adventure game. Like, one of the things adventure games do so well, and we talk about this a little bit in WAF, but I'm really looking forward to it in this year because we're going to see it a lot, is that, by simplifying the actual mechanic part so much, you leave room for some other bits. You don't have to leave that room, but because you're not worried about what the actual play is going to be, you can do world building, easier.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a way that can't be done through play. Like, some of my favorite examples of world building have like wonderful, like something like a BioShock or something like that has like amazing world building and has really excellent play. But I think it's a little bit easier when you're not concentrating on how you're going to shoot mans to set up these kind of relationships and everything like that. Because you're not concerned about getting someone to a new level or giving them a new, like, not everyone's giving you a new goal, like you're not going on missions, which is a big thing that gets in the way of relationships feeling real in video games, where you have a friend and then he goes and tells you to go collect his lunchbox from the bottom of a sewer.
Right.
Like, if me and you are good friends, if we lived in a zombie apocalypse and you were like, Gary, can you go, find my cardigan? Like, it's on top of a water tower somewhere in the south end of town. I'd tell you to go fuck yourself. Or we'd go together and go do it.
Right.
Or I'd say, I would make you a new cardigan out of, like, human leather, whatever, like, resources available.
Like, a human leather cardigan. We,
for the distinguished post-apocalyptic gentleman. We'd do something, So it just feels weird when that kind of thing happens, even in really well-built worlds. Like, it's right. The relationships that feel good in these games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Play it.
Play it. Play it. Play it.
If you're on the fence, I mean, you shouldn't listen to this if you're on the fence. And again, it's so hard to keep an audience.
You've already gotten everything.
Yeah, you've already played it. Have enjoyed it.
Yes. Please have enjoyed it.
Yes.
Yep. Or do not have listened to this.
Yeah, one or the other.
Yes. The credit. Yeah, like you know, the wrap up bit here or whatever. This is a bit of an unusual episode of The Level, but there are other episodes, the majority of them, where we're talking about kind of current games and you know, game events and news and stories and blips and blops and bloops. You can see those pretty much every week, hosted by myself, Dennis Furia, Ben Merkel, David Moneysmith, Gary and I. You know, we do other shows on the network here. Gary, can you tell them?
Yeah, we do Watch Out for Fireballs, which is kind of similar to what this was. You know, kind of an in-depth exploration of old games. And then we also do a show called Bonfireside Chat, which I think is probably the most zoomed in of any video game podcast that I've ever seen. Like, on the Facebook group, someone was joking about doing a Dark Souls episode of Watch Out for Fireballs.
Yeah.
And could we go back at this point? Like, we are so zoomed in on that game.
Yeah.
Like, it is like a scene-to-scene, character-to-character discussion.
I'm a little bit heartbroken because I don't think the comment was posted. There was some kind of computer thing where I postulated that we should probably, if we did that, it would have to be Bonfireside Chat : Gary guesting on
I didn't see that.
Okay, so it didn't post, and I feel very bad that this is the end of a this is at the end of a very specialized episode of the show.
but both those shows, if you like that kind of thing, definitely worth listening to.
And if you want to check out more of The Level, it's on Facebook, facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast, duckfeed.tv if you're down for any of the backlog, you know, subscription, iTunes, you know, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a new website that Gary started called spookyskeletonpics.tumblr.com.
I was just about to say that. Like, if you're anything like me, you were unsatisfied with the internet aggregations of pictures of spooky skeletons. So I decided to take it upon myself and put them all together in one place. I'm trying to update it at least like every 2 days or so, because the internet is infinite. Like, I honestly believe that I will die before I find all of the spooky skeleton pics in the world. So if you want like a continuous source, subscribe to that Tumblr. And other people probably use Tumblr like a social thing. So they're getting like op-ed pieces about millennials, and they're getting pictures of food probably. And every once in a while, the same way that skeletons are everywhere, there's just a spooky skeleton that just pops up in there doing probably like a dumb little dance, like a little moron. So please go to Spooky Skeleton Pics.
Do. It is imperative. It is imperative that you do this.
Yeah, don't say I didn't warn you.
Like we should probably have put like a trigger warning at the beginning of that. Like to say, like, hey, if you are easily spooked, if you're easily shaken, rattled, rolled even.
Or if you're easily snaken, rattled, or rolled.
Then you probably shouldn't have listened to that. Or definitely don't go see spooky skeleton.
But let's say you're brave.
Yeah.
If you're feeling brave tonight, definitely go there.
Yeah. You
know? Well, I like to have it running on my phone on an open web page. Mm-hmm. So whenever I'm in a dark room, I can just pull it up and get a little spooked.
Yeah. Well, it reminds you you're alive.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminds you you're alive, but there's death looming within you.
Yeah, exactly. There's death just waiting to crawl out of you.
There's a literal symbol of death behind your eyes. Yeah. Think about that.
Yes.
There's
a literal symbol of death that is waiting to crawl out of you and then play hot cross buns on its own ribs.
Yeah, exactly. I wish I had a marimba. There's that one iPhone alarm sound that sounds like spooky skeletons. Like, sounds like them walking up
it does, and that's the
skeleton hill.
That's like one of the most common iPhone ringtones too.
Yep.
So we have a nation of technophile spooky skeleton fans who don't even know it. This is untapped market potential.
Yep. So, interested in skeletons, please go to that website.
Please do. So, I can't think of how to end this, so I'm Cole Ross, at Cole Ross on Twitter.
Yep, and Gary Butterfield is at Gary Buh, B-U-H, G-A-R-Y-B-U-H, on Twitter as well.
Yes.
And,
Yep, Umbasa.
Yep, praise the sun.
And this is your heuristic. Is skeleton? Yes. Is not skeleton?
Nick posted that funny Twitter thing. Yeah. That image of the Twitter thing. So that's not a skeleton, but it makes it because it has to do with the enemy inside.
Yes.
So I like that angle of skeleton appreciation. Yeah. Is the fact that these things are monsters and they're inside all of us.
Yes.
So
one of my favorite like seeds of a short story I've ever written, mm-hmm. and it was going to be like a podcast kind of thing, was about the Great Skeleton Revolt, where all of the mm-hmm. skeletons climbed out of the people they were inside.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
and played play the rib cages.
Yes, and just and
made music
and form their own perfect society.
Because they're such idiots. Like, look at just there's something about just look at these skeletons. Where it's like, look at these morons. You know?
Well, no. I mean, we are you know, diminishing them by putting the, you know, this is the skeleton equivalent of a minstrel show.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true. But I like it much more than like the black person equivalent of a minstrel show.
Yeah, but like where are the skeletons that are that are pursuing their doctorate? Where are the you know, the skeletons who are making their last home loan payment?
They need a Cosby show equivalent. Right? They need a TV show with a successful skeleton. Yeah. Who's not just dancing like a moron or planning to take over the world.
Right. No,
you know, a skeleton doctor, I'm sure there's a lot of those. Maybe I'll do like a week that's all like successful skeletons.
Right. Just
to share the stereotypes.
Skeletons sipping out of a snifter of brandy. Skeletons, yeah.
Sophisticated skeletons
that are standing at a chalkboard that is mostly full. Skeletons that are accepting a Nobel Skeleton Peace Prize.
Okay, so image search for skeleton doctors. Like there's quite a few actually. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of just doctors palling around with a skeleton, but there's also several skeletons who happen to be doctors as well.
I was happy that you posted the scariest image ever.
Which one is that? There's lots of curious
mentions. it is quite spooky. No, the skeleton with the bear.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Have you seen the skit that's from?
Mm.
No. It's I forget. I think it might be from a bit of Fry and Laurie. It's some kind of British sketch comedy show where they're talking about the using the scariest image ever to help people lose weight.
Mm.
They show them that, you know, they showed them this picture and they're so rattled, much like a skeleton, that they can't eat. And then they're alluding to what this image might be throughout the entire thing. It's like a Mr. Show length, you know, 8-minute sketch.
That's awesome.
And then they flash this brief image of a bear next to a skeleton.